It means his territory, the land attached to his tower thingy.
Paltrow explained, bending down to help make Gustav feel that they were on the same side and that she had many valuable things to teach him.
It's pronounced domain, and you're an idiot, the goat said, then coughed up some cud and chewed on it, rolling his eyes.
Paltrow stood straight and pointed at the goat with a shrug that said,
Can you believe this, ungulate?
He's right, I think, Fia said. I've always heard domain, sure enough.
Those scribes do love their extra S's,
Argabella added.
The castle scribe back home spelled Argabella with three of them. He looked very pretty, but sounded like a cat with a hairball.
They hadn't stopped walking all through this exchange until Paltrow froze suddenly to sniff the air, taking in a deep lungful. Her stomach made noises like growling dogs. Gustav took a whiff and caught something savory and oily that was making the rogue's stomach grumble.
The Dark Lord's domain, she said,
nose tilted up to catch the breeze.
He's up ahead. And you're in luck, as it smells like Lord Toby is throwing one of his grand luncheons.
A grand luncheon,
Fia said, catching up to her in a few strides.
So there will be others there, strangers, high society.
He's not the most sociable sort, our Dark Lord, but it's possible he might have some turtle hogs at the table,
Paltrow admitted.
I don't have anything fancy to wear, Fia said. Think I can get away with just closing the cloak?
She pulled said cloak around her body and buttoned it down the front. She was so tall and broad that she somewhat resembled a velvet-wrapped armoire, and Gustav briefly considered calling her Chester Drawers for a laugh, but then remembered he kind of needed Fia to be on his side so as not to wind up as part of somebody's grand luncheon.
Wardrobe shouldn't be a problem,
the rogue said. As Paltrow led them along, they soon found neatly kept cobbles under their feet and hooves, respectively, leading them down a hill toward the dark tower of Toby, its black stones glistening in the morning sun as it stood proudly, surrounded by well-trimmed ornamental shrubbery and several circular stone walls. Fia's earlier nervousness subsided immediately after she spotted a rose garden inside the outer wall. She turned to Argabella to share her excitement, murmuring,
"Those roses!"
But she found the rabbit woman's eyes wide and soft with wonder as she beheld the inner-walled garden planted in neat rows of green plants bursting with life, the scent of flowers and rich black loam floating on the air.
Those vegetables, I'd noticed them before, but now that I'm different, oh, they smell wonderful.
There's leather down there, too, Gustav assured them. And a nice pile of rotted melons.
And chickens, Paltrow growled. Of an indeterminate amount. 'Tis a dismal day indeed.
So is this Dark Lord going to mind us being here?
Fia asked, self-consciously pulling the cloak more carefully about her.
Nah.
Argabella was almost skipping a little.
I told you, he's very nice. Takes him a while to get to the door, but as long as you bring him something useful, he's generally glad for the company.
Beware, though. The Dark Lord,
Paltrow intoned,
does not suffer fools gladly.
But he suffers foods just fine, and he's going to like the young asparagus I picked this morning. His always turns out a bit woody. I only wish we could have found some cheese.
Paltrow sighed and deflated a little.
I had some gold tied to my saddle for food like that. But my nightmare steed is gone. Vanished in the... Oh, wait, there he is. Caponi!
Snowflake waited patiently by the gate as if he were accustomed to having it opened for him by the local poo-boy so that he might crunch upon his morning grain, a sentiment Gustav deeply understood. Paltrow soon had the bag of gold off the saddle and the gate opened, although it was a bit dicey, what with Gustav trying to eat the saddle again and the chickens pecking at Paltrow's breeches for their own breakfast. The huntress eventually untangled herself from the reins, gates, and chickens, but did require some help. Now, armed with gold, the group ventured into the nearby town of Dower, just a terrifyingly dark and poisonous wood away, where Argabella sniffed out the best cheese shop and crafted a gift basket of fragrant cheeses, dainty grapes, and the artisanal crackers she said Toby enjoyed most. Finally, they stood on the doorstep of the tower, a respectful foot back from the unwelcome mat, which Poltro claimed was a trapdoor to untold evil and or the jam cellar. Before they could knock, a postman appeared, dropped a wad of letters on the mat, rapped on the oaken door, and fled before anyone could get a proper look at him. Argabella reached for the letters, but Poltro stopped her with a hand.
"It is not wise to touch the Dark Lord's mail."
Argabella's nose twitched.
"I was just going to hand it to him, helpful-like."
Poltro shook her head.
"The Dark Lord found me, rooting through his coupon flyers once."
She lifted her hair to show a jagged cut in her ear that left the lobe in two unattractive flaps.
"Once." "And he slit your ear for that?"
Fia bellowed, the veins standing out on her forehead in rage.
"No,"
Poltro said, letting her hair fall back down.
"He yelled at me and I tumbled off the steps and landed on me back. And one of the chickens tried to pull out my earring and I jerked away and there it is. Mangled for life. You mess with the male, you get mutilated by those clucking horrors."
All this time, the sound of spectral footsteps could be heard, tapping down stone stairs as aged and somber as eternity, their middles bowed with the passing of the slippered feet of dark lords long past. It really did take an awfully long time, and several attempts at polite conversation were made, but then the sound of tripping and cursing would interrupt, and honestly, only so much time could be spent talking about what a lovely day it was before the day entirely ceased to be lovely. At last, the sound of a lock snapped on the other side, and the carved wood door creaked inward, just a crack.
"Who dares disturb my dark rumination?"
A voice croaked, deep and heavy with foreboding. Everyone looked to Poltro, but the huntress had skulked around behind Fia and was busy staring at her black-rimmed nails. Oddly enough, it was tremulous Argabella who spoke first.
"Good morning, crepuscular lord, sir. I know it's been 5 years since I've been around to visit, but you won't believe the asparagus I've brought, along with other fine vegetables."
"Give him the basket,"
Fia whispered out of the side of her frozen smile.
"All right, the basket."
Smacking Gustav away from the fine ribbon he was chewing, Argabella picked up the now ribbonless basket and held it out to the yawning chasm of shadow.
"Is that..."
The voice within coughed, cleared its throat, spat into the bushes, and then spoke in an utterly normal voice that wasn't scary at all, but rather smooth and affable, like warm milk.
"Is that Manchego?"
The door opened farther, and out stepped a man who looked to Gustav, judging by his childlike excitement regarding the basket and his general body language, bereft of menace. The Dark Lord was slight and middle-aged, and his skin was pleasantly tawny with copper undertones. He had practically no chin, although something that very much wished to be a beard clung to a tiny moon of flesh that had grand aspirations of chininess. His eyes were a cheerful, if dull, brown, not at all the lightning-lit violet or lava rock black one might expect. Above them, his eyebrows were apparently trying to race his beard for supremacy, as they were bushy, with antenna-like bits waving around.
"It is Manchego,"
Argabella said.
"And some of those crackers you like, with the seeds placed on them by artisans, and a little pot of something jamish, possibly made with dragon fruit."
She held out the basket, and the Dark Lord took it and giggled.
"Oh, goody. This'll be the perfect amuse-bouche for the grand luncheon upstairs. If you'd all care to join me?"
He looked around from face to face and settled on Gustav, who swallowed the last of the ribbon like a noodle and said,
"You're going to amuse us with boots? Now we're talking."
The Dark Lord's eyes lit up as much as dull brown things can.
"Did that goat," he asked, "just talk?"
How observant of you, Gustav answered. The name's Gustav. Now, about those amusing boots.
Toby, might I introduce my, friends?
Arkabella said, sounding more confident than she had thus far.
Thea? Gustav? And I believe you already know Poltrow?
Toby's face abruptly contorted as if he'd been painted by a cubist living on nothing but Weltschmerz and absinthe.
Poltrow! Where are you hiding, girl, and did you bring me the farm boys?
He paused, his lips twitching.
The farm boys' herbs in the specially made herb box.
As he said it, he made little quotation marks with his fingers. Fia stepped aside to reveal the cowering huntress.
Ah, yes, my dark lord. Well, no, actually, don't know much about herbs, to be honest. Arkabella found some greenish things, though, so maybe that'll do you.
Toby shook his head and stepped closer.
No, Poltrow, remember how I sent you out on an errand to find a certain farm boy who thought he was the Ozinche one way, and you were supposed to bring me his ill-stay eating bay art, hey?
Poltrow looked befuddled, and in profound need of rescue, Gustav rose to the occasion.
He means the dead kid's heart, and no, we didn't bring it because that's nasty.
And rude, Fia added, especially since we were hoping you might bring him back to life.
Toby raised an eyebrow.
But I wanted him dead.
Fia also raised an eyebrow.
Well, he is, for now.
Toby's face lit up like a firefly's fundament.
Excellent, Poltrow, my huntress. We must celebrate. We must feast. This is your first major success.
He wrapped an arm around Poltrow and steered her toward the stairs, shoving her upward. She skittered up a few steps like an ant, avoiding the crush of a merciless heel, and he followed, so she kept on skittering. The entire party trotted behind, curious to see how things would play out, and if there might be any extra cheese to go with the delectable smells wafting from the top of the tower. The stairs were so many and so steep that no one had the breath to explain the farm boy's current situation further. Whether for fear or asthma, Poltrow didn't admit that the farm boy's demise was not reflective of her murderous capabilities. Upward and upward they labored, hundreds and hundreds of stairs. Gustav clattered up behind them, helpfully ejecting a trail of pellets out his back door in case someone should get lost and require a reminder of the way out. Halfway up the tower, the scent of the food reached peak deliciousness and pulled the humans forward with more alacrity. When at last they burst onto the floor of Toby's dining room, there was some confusion as to whether or not they'd all simultaneously died of exhaustion and landed in the same heaven. The long wooden table was simply covered in food, drink, and unnecessarily ornate candelabras. Flagons of wine twinkled like liquid gems, and greased-up birds were suggestively splayed on pewter platters, onions and apples spilling from their assorted orifices. An entire peacock somehow had been emptied out, cooked, and stuffed back inside its own gorgeous plumage, and it didn't look particularly happy about the situation. A centerpiece of artfully arranged hedgehogs and turtles quivered but did not seem edible or interested in mating. Tiny, moist quails, lollipops of lamb, and a pile of baby chickens that appeared to have been fried whole, feathers and all, lolled on their plates. Quivering cubes of meat sat upon particularly small plates, and wee whole fish rested upon large plates scribbled over with glimmering sauces. Watermelons carved as warships carried bananas in full armor, sailing on seas of aspic and gelatin and compote. Truncheons of roasted vegetables, cauldrons of savory dips, skulls of fondue, and tureens of glistening soup waited, their ladles practically begging to be used. Pâté jiggled. Pork gelatin wiggled, and fig jam figgled.
"Where are the blasted boots?" Gustav complained. "This is the worst lunch I've ever seen."
It's magnificent.
Arabella breathed, her nose quivering with keen arousal.
Toby, you've really outdone yourself this time.
Where are the other guests?
Fia asked, clutching her cloak to her chest and trying not to drool.
Other guests?
Toby sat down at the head of the table and looked up at her curiously.
What other guests?
Fia gesticulated at the laden table.
This is enough food for an army.
This is enough food for me,
Toby said warningly.
Be glad you brought the cheese and crackers.
The party gazed at him with existential despair as he sat down, stone-faced, and tucked a napkin into his neckline before a spread that was many times the size of a human stomach. Eventually, he could bear it no longer, and he laughed, pointing at them.
You should see your faces. Priceless. No, of course, you must join me. Please be seated and fall to.
And then they dined. Fia asked so many questions regarding what was and was not fried in animal fat that Toby cast an enchantment, enrobing all the vegan items with a greenish glow. She began with an assortment of blistered folk seaweed, inhaled a sublimated plum bun, then annihilated a platter of sheltered orecchiette. Her every action was shrouded in some sort of violence. Poltro took advantage of the glow to freely plunder the many meaty delicacies, such as the oxmarrow bombs glazed with snail paste and exploded salt, the sun-gold fish dumplings steamed in butter smoke, and the invigorated ham jam for which Borix was famed throughout Pell. The Dark Lord demanded that she put on a lobster bib when she threatened to destroy her fine costume with a distressed anchovy dressing. Arabella made no beef about her current disinterest in meats, but instead quietly joined Fia in enjoying the vegetarian offerings. She started with a winter acorn and hand-rubbed arugula toss, followed with a naive kimchi medley, then graduated to a frightened farfalle, swimming and tormented eggplant liqueur, and surprised truffle drippings. She nibbled and moaned in turn, her whiskers twitching happily. Gustav was given an old boot, once bespoke and very chic, but now used and soulless. The Dark Lord claimed it was too expensive to be thrown out, even though its mate was long gone.
This is the finest boot I've ever beheld or smelled,
Gustav whispered.
I can practically taste the brains in which the leather was tanned. Ooh, and there's a soupçon of foot sweat impregnating the uppers.
What are these?
Fia asked, pointing to a big platter of circular breads topped with savory fillings and crumbles of cheese.
I call them tacos.
Toby said proudly, rolling one up and stuffing it in his mouth. After a moment of chewing, he sighed blissfully.
Because they're circles that you can take with you.
My own invention. They're called tacos, and you didn't invent them,
Gustav said, mid-boot.
I can turn you into Gravlax,
Toby warned. Gustav said.
Bah! Whatever. I'm very impressed with your tacos.
At some point, they all fell back in their chairs, clutching their bellies and groaning. Only Toby continued in his gustatory glory, downing something fried in duck fat and a piquant dipping sauce accented with a sprinkle of fondled pine nuts.
Now that you've dined, I have bad news, my friends,
he said between bites.
There's another course?
Fia moaned.
Or another curse?
Arabella asked.
It was in the food, wasn't it? And it's going to turn us into newts?
Toby smiled, gratified to finally have someone besides hedgehogs and turtles to share his meal, and also pleased that they thought him capable of turning them into newts.
Neither. It's just that, well, if I understand correctly, this farm boy, Worstly,
is dead?
Really dead, Fia said.
Like ostentatiously dead, Gustav added. Eyes open, tongue hanging out, bones in places bones shouldn't be. Smells worse than normal.
Lord Toby rubbed his hands together with glee.
And, Poltro, this was your doing,
All eyes looked to the huntress, whose face was smeared with an expressed sardine and ramp reduction. Was all she managed.
I fell on him,
Fia finally admitted,
while trying to enter the sleeping castle. It was an accident.
And he just died. Easy as that.
Well, judging by the bones poking out of his mushier bits, I don't think it was easy for him, Gustav said.
Toby licked a finger and held it up, cocking his head as if listening for a far-off song.
Yet I sense that the winds of destiny have not changed course, which means that either this Wesley was not actually the chosen one, or that he's not really dead, or that whoever proclaimed him chosen was lying.
It was Staff, the pixie, Gustav offered. And honestly, she didn't strike me as particularly trustworthy. She had only one sock.
Toby stroked the thing that he probably thought of as a beard.
Her fashion shortcomings are legendary. But when it comes to the bequeathal of Aura's staff is never wrong. The boy must be revivified. Alas, my powers are not yet strong enough to accomplish that sort of thing. If I consorted with the darkest of forces, I could probably turn him into, some sort of shambling, brainless zombie.
Nature beat you to it,
Gustav mumbled under his breath.
But that sort of creature could never fulfill the destiny of the Chosen One.
I will require an influx of power.
Toby cracked his knuckles and turned to Gustav with an air of destiny.
Goat of many magics, will you agree to act as my familiar?
What does that entail, exactly?
More boots?
Toby grinned a dark grin.
You will be bonded to me, body and soul, our auras merged in the service of the Dark Lord's otherworldly powers.
Gustav sputtered. How about no?
Looking flustered, but still somewhat hopeful, Toby looked to Argabella.
Would you, Argabella, consider cleaving yourself unto me?
I think maybe you're getting a bit too familiar,
Fia growled.
What? Toby, no,
Argabella said, drawing back from the table.
Gross.
But if I had a true magical familiar,
Toby started, sounding pretty whiny for a dark lord.
I could bring the Chosen One back to life, be a real necromancer, grow a real beard.
We're people,
Argabella argued.
Not animals. I'm sorry your turtles and hedgehogs never worked out their differences, but that body and soul binding business just sounds icky. I like you, but not in that way.
Toby's shoulders slumped, which seemed to be their normal mode.
Well then, the bad news is I can't help you.
That's okay,
Argabella said, a dark look in her eyes.
We'll just go see Grinda the Sandwich instead, and perhaps she has the right sort of powers. She's the one who enchanted the castle, after all, so she owes me. Waking up a farm boy should be nothing for someone that impressive and powerful.
The look on Toby's face suggested that he was considering smiting her for assuming that Grinda was more powerful than he was. But then he started thinking out loud, which made Gustav deeply uncomfortable. When humans began to think out loud, they often confessed their interest in doing horrible things, especially to nearby succulent goats.
I can't smite the rabbit girl, considering how often she used to bring me mail and cheese before the whole curse thing. But this Grinda is definitely a problem. Grinda, where have I heard that name before? Grinda. Grinda the sandwich. Grinda the sandwich of Malefic Beach, aunt of the Chosen One and possessor of a terrible postman.
So you know her, then?
Gustav asked.
No, of course not. Whatever gave you that idea, silly goat? But she sounds like a real treat,
Toby said. But what he probably really meant was that she sounded like someone who needed to be taken down a few pegs right before a certain dark lord plundered her library and laboratory for the pearls of Arcana locked within. Gustav had always been good at reading the menacing body language of humans, and the way Toby was wringing his hands and snickering darkly spoke of either ill intent or a dire need for lotion.
"Would you want to go with us, then?"
Argabella asked, her watery eyes filled with hope.
"We could use magical protection, and maybe you'll be able to convince Grinda to help you, too."
"That would be just lovely," Toby said,
and he really did seem to mean that, which made Gustav a little nervous. For although Lord Toby possessed the finest of boots and seemed a genial host, there was something off about him. His smile was a bit mad, his bland brown eyes twinkling with something a bit too greedy and murderous. The thought of being the man's bosom friend, much less his familiar, made Gustav's cud go sour. And of course Gustav couldn't forget that earlier slip about how the Dark Lord had sent a rogue to cut out the Pooh Boy's heart. Gustav hadn't been too fond of Worstly, but his most sinister plans had included kicking the boy in the junk, not sawing out his internal organs for nefarious wizardly reasons. Gustav wasn't sure what he wanted now that his life had changed forever, but he was fairly certain it didn't involve having his own heart roasted in Toby's oven and topped with a cardamom souffle. He would have to watch this warlock carefully.
"You must be tired and ready to sleep off that meal," Toby told his guests, ringing a bell. "I'll summon my servant, Dementria, to show you to your quarters. Why don't you take your ease this evening? Let me make some arrangements for provisions, and we'll depart in the morning on a pleasant perambulation."
They all belched their agreement, except for the turtles and hedgehogs, forming the centerpiece. Lord Toby muttered a phrase, sketched a sigil in the air, and splayed the fingers of one hand suddenly to their maximum extent, waggling it three times. The animals disappeared from the table, and Gustav desperately hoped they found themselves safely deposited in the lush gardens surrounding the tower to enjoy their freedom, mate with their own kind if they wished, and be amazed by their good fortune. The Dark Lord, Gustav noted, was in an uncommonly good mood. And to a goat, that remained quite worrisome. 8. At the scene of a richly deserved punch in the kisser. It was a rare sunny day in Boryx when the party set off to the south with light hearts and a wagon groaning under the weight of victuals and Lord Toby's potion and feast ingredients all fastidiously labeled to avoid mixing the deadly mushrooms with the edible ones or the salamander eyes with the salmon roe. Since Fia couldn't really ride horses without crushing them or having her feet drag the ground, and also because cardio is important, they all walked alongside the wagon, which was being pulled by two sturdy oxen named Moxie and Doxie. That was all right by Toby, who'd never actually ridden a horse before and wasn't entirely prepared to look a complete fool. He knew he'd be able to ride at least as well as Poltro, but that wasn't saying much. As he locked the tower door and left a note for Dementria to keep things tidy while he was gone, he couldn't help gazing up at the top of his home. He looked up, and up, and up, and up, to the tiny window where he spent much of his time watching life pass by, using an enchanted spyglass. He'd grown so accustomed to the lofty view that the world seemed quite large and strange when viewed from his doorstep.
"Coming, Lord Toby?"
Arcabella called. She stood with the others beside Toby's oxen. He'd never met the oxen before or been close enough to smell their meaty musk. Poltro's brother kept track of the beasts, using them to cart groceries in from some hamlet or other. Now Toby realized how very big oxen were and how very moist their noses looked, and that somehow made him realize how very big and terrifying the world could be.
"Grr,"
he said, pressing his back against the solid comfort of his door. His door. He understood. Everything else was still up for discussion.
"We are losing travel time," Fia added.
"Hey, you look a little green,"
the goat noted.
"Are you dyspeptic or homesick?"
If he was being insulted by goats, Toby clearly had to pull himself together.
"I am merely laying an enchantment about my domain," he said. "Pay me no mind." "Keeping the chickens out,"
Poltro nodded.
"Quite wise, my lord."
As Toby looked beyond his new companions and his wagon, the road seemed to disappear into the horizon. He could well imagine the terrors that awaited. Monsters. Larger monsters. Entire cities bereft of cheese. Yet that way might also lie his dreams. The means to becoming a true dark lord, replete with powers beyond his current ken. All he had to do was step off his own porch and keep walking. And in the company of a rogue, a fighter, a bard, and a talking goat, no less. Surely he could do that much. He stuck out his foot, for the first step was surely the hardest part. And Poltro put a hand against his chest.
"Not on the unwelcome mat, my lord,"
she reminded him. Grateful for the timely reminder, Toby stepped over the mat, saving himself a troubling and sticky afternoon in the jam cellar. His boot landed in the dust, and he smelled his fine roses, which were kept trimmed and fertilized by Poltro's brother. He took another step, and another, right up until he was close enough to pluck a rose from its bush.
"These are pretty fabulous, aren't they?"
he asked, holding the rose out to Fia. She took the flower, but not as if it were a gift from a fine wizard, turning it around carefully, prying its petals apart and picking off the thorns one by one, she considered it.
"Better than most, but I think the bushes toward the center of the circle are more true. Within a few generations, with the right care, I do believe they could win a prize."
Bowing, she held the flower out to Argabella, who laughed lightly and blushed, tucking it above her ear. Fia started walking, and everyone followed her, including Toby. By the time he realized it was happening, his tower was far behind them, obscured by a cloud of dirt and methane from the oxen. He told himself this going outside business wasn't so bad, and began to sweat. They headed almost due south, toward Malefic Beach, straight through the pristine realms of the dwarves, who mostly lived in the Corpus Range, and left the largest part of their lands open and unspoiled, concentrating their population in a few cities and building economies around the shampooing of beards. Poltro commented that their route was likely to take them through the wondrous domain of the elves, being very careful to pronounce the word correctly this time. A quick roll call revealed that none of them had ever beheld the magical elven Morningwood before, home to the proudest stands of timber anywhere. Argabella realized that it was the perfect moment to perform her bardic duties, and maybe make Lord Toby more comfortable as he kept gazing back in the direction of his tower and sucking worriedly at his lips like a small child who'd lost his favorite doll. She pulled her lute around front, strummed an experimental chord to check that it was in tune, then plunged into a cheerful riff, improvising a happy song about cheese that was sure to be a hit with her audience.
"Oh, there's nothing quite so hearty as a huge hunk of hearty when I'm going to visit the elves. I'd sure like to take a crack at a wedge of Colby Jack when I'm going to visit the elves."
The rest of the party quickly caught on and joined in on the last line of each verse.
"Yes, I'm the kind of fella who'd like some mozzarella when I'm going to visit the elves. A thick slice of Swiss sure wouldn't go amiss when I'm going to visit the elves. just toss some gorgonzola into my cheese hola when I'm going to visit the elves.
Fia threw back her cloak and danced along with heavy steps as she walked, straining the ability of the chainmail to contain her metaphorical milkshakes. Although everyone noticed and enjoyed her enthusiasm, Lord Toby took an especial, perhaps salacious, interest in her movements. Fia had kept her cloak fastened all during yesterday's epic luncheon, so he had not realized she was in such fantastic shape or that she had so very little clothing underneath the cloak. It took only another couple of verses before his hips began to gyrate and thrust in an unfortunate simulation of rhythm, and a single verse after that he had shimmied up to Fia in what he thought was a deeply sensual dance of seduction, but really wasn't. He puckered his lips and stood on tiptoe to give her a kiss, and the goat called him a jackass, and something happened to the sun because it completely disappeared, and the music stopped, and... Toby blinked and moaned some time later.
Where am I? About a foot away from my fist, Fia growled. Would you like to try that again?
Toby's vision snapped into focus, and he saw said fist and the snarling face behind it. Beyond that was the blue sky, and he realized that he was flat on his back, in the dirt. His teeth did not feel securely anchored in his gums, and he tasted blood.
No, no,
he assured her through mashed lips.
Once was enough. Good. Delighted to travel with you, Lord Toby. You have been kind and generous with your provisions, and I promise I will have your back if there's a fight. But if I, or anyone else, for that matter, wants anything more than a traveling companion... We'll let you know with words we speak out loud. Do not assume otherwise. Got it. That's very clear. Thank you.
Toby coughed once and spat blood to the side. Fia beamed at him, unclenching her fist and offering an open hand to help him up. He took it and she hauled him easily to his feet.
Excellent. Then we can continue without further delay. Perhaps our bard knows a healing song to help you feel better.
Argabella's ears drooped.
I know one called the Ouchie Song, but that's it.
Practice makes perfect, Fia said,
and the bard strummed the opening chord. Gustav noted with private amusement that Fia still had a bottle of NyQuil on her belt, but had seemingly forgotten it was there. Perhaps looking like a pummeled pudding would remind the Dark Lord that consent was more important than magical ability and being born among the landed gentry. 9. In the luminous presence of the elvish morning wood. As the afternoon wore on to dusk and the party continued perambulating and singing about cheese and fond fantasies of fabulous fair folk, a funny thing happened. Everyone started sneezing, even Gustav. Poltro in particular began to swell up and look a bit puce about the gills. Fia was at her side in an instant, but she couldn't find anything wrong with the rogue, nor could she stop sneezing herself. Fortunately, the Dark Lord never traveled without a trunk of handkerchiefs, doilies, and antimacassars, and he generously supplied everyone with a bit of linen he'd embroidered personally and with very little skill.
"Do you have a potion for this malady, my lord?"
Argabella asked hopefully, whiskers twitching and, truth be told, a little moist. Toby flicked his fingers, in no way trying to get rid of a persistent booger.
Alas, there is no spell to staunch the common cold. Not even NyQuil can touch that beast,
Fia lamented. Argabella sneezed explosively.
Perhaps the elves have something, a dainty posset of flowers and berries to soothe...
Yes,
Fia chimed in between sneezes.
The elves are known for their healing powers and wisdom.
And their beauty and art and songs,
Argabella added.
And their skill at killing things they don't like, Gustav said.
and their cunning perception in excellent aim.
Poltro sniffled, but it came out very muddled as her lips were starting to swell.
Ah,
Topi barked.
Myth and hyperbole, but they do make an excellent mead. And here we are, morning wood.
As the words left his mouth, the smooth stone road disappeared into the rich forest loam before them, and the wagon bumped onto soft earth as they entered the shadow of the great green forest of Morningwood. The air seemed to dance with magic itself, tiny glittering flecks of dust turning to gold as they spun through sunbeams piercing the verdant canopy. The birds called sweetly, their songs somehow more musical, more intricate, as if these birds had perhaps been sent off to study opera and returned home after having their hearts broken and learning valuable lessons about birdhood. To either side of the path, which was really just two dirt ruts now, soft green fronds of ferns unfurled along with periwinkle carpets of velvety violets. The oxen had to struggle to pull the wagon now, but no one really noticed the beast's plight because everything that people cared about was extraordinarily pretty. No one could hear Moxie and Doxie snorting and groaning, what with all the sneezing.
Oh my!
Fia breathed before she fell into another sneezing fit. Somewhere in the forest, a bright voice giggled.
Who's there?
Toby shouted, pulling back his sleeve to give his magic fingers more nimbleness. Taming the challenges of stately morning wood would no doubt require two ready hands. In response, an arrow zipped past uncomfortably close to his face, taking a patch of his beard with it.
Thwack!
Everyone stopped walking to turn and stare at the arrow quivering in a silvery birch. Toby went for his chin, checking that it was still in place and that his beard wasn't completely gone, taking his powers with it. Fia soon had her sword in one hand and her pruning shears in the other as she squatted in a fighting stance, her muscles rippling and her chainmail creaking with effort as her cloak fluttered to the ground. Argabella held her lute and shook with nervous anxiety as she continued a series of tiny baby sneezes. Poltro simply struggled to breathe, her face as red and swollen as a baboon's posterior. After assuring himself that he was still in possession of his chin, Toby licked his finger and held it up, turning slowly in a sunbeam until he faced the direction from which the arrow had obviously originated.
Oh, wise and fair elves of Morningwood, we humble journeymen beg passage through your domain,
he shouted. A confident woman's voice replied, though the owner of said voice remained unseen.
Take heed, children of men. We fair folk are aware that no one comes upon Morningwood without good reason. It is sprung from your dreams of greatness and magic, a monolith of beauty and strength. But beware that you will also, in passing through, discover the steely strength of our Morningwood, whose limber limbs bend but do not break, yet bear succulent fruit with each new stroke of spring.
In the quiet that followed, Fia could hear Poltro not breathing. Argabella dropped her lute, fell to her knees, and tried to find the girl's mouth, but failed. Fia stood over them, weapons ready, sneezing.
Ah, I'm not sure what all that means, Gustav called, but a member of our party is in dire need of the renowned elvish healing. Like right now, unless your woody magnificence needs fertilizer of the dead and rotting kind.
When no one appeared, Fia added between sneezes,
Please, and might I mention that I assure you of our respect for your proud Morningwood, which is most impressive and eternal.
The air shifted, and everyone stopped sneezing to gasp. An elf stood there among them, quiet and dignified, everything that Fia had dreamed of seeing when she'd heard tales of the fair folk back home. The elf woman was as pale as the heart of a rose, tall and slender and graceful, her snow-white robes fluttering in a breeze that wasn't there. Her eyes were fathomless, glittering green, her ears coming to slender points that peeked out from beneath hair like spun gold. A jewel glittered around her neck as she bowed slightly.
I am Sylvanadriel,
she said, her voice sweet as chimes kissed by a breeze.
And you guys fell for the oldest trick in the book. It's called sneeze and powder, and you just kept breathing it in like absolute morons. Lord, what fools these mortals be, am I right?
Godzooks, yes,
a new voice answered, dripping with condescension.
Dumber than a third nipple.
It belonged to another elf who appeared at her side, this one masculine but still refined and suppler than most men in Fia's opinion. He was clad in a hunting costume woven of the colors of the forest, moss green and birch gray, with a silver sash from shoulder to waist. His blonde hair was long and flowing past his shoulders, and he had a bow in hand and a quiver of arrows on his back.
Poltro's still not breathing, Gustav noted. That's bad, right?
Sylvanadriel laughed her windchime laugh and knelt smoothly. Removing a handful of powder from a velvet reticule at her waist, she blew a cloud of glitter into Poltro's face, then tossed the rest in the air. Fia had never been happier to not be sneezing. The glitter settled on Poltro's swollen cheeks, and after a long moment the huntress jerked with a deep, gasping breath and set to coughing. Fia helped her sit up, and the more Poltro coughed, the more the unhealthy burgundy faded from her face, leaving her ashen and exhausted and positively riddled with glitter.
It's called a remedy. Ever heard of it?
Sylvanadriel said.
You're welcome.
The great healing power of the elves is celebrated in our realm,
Toby explained tersely,
but we didn't get the memo about how the elves instigated the sickness they later treated.
Yeah, said the male elf.
But who do you think spreads those rumors?
We do.
So there.
I'm Borgolas, by the way, son of Rodmore, the king of the elves. And you may not pass through our domain without the king's leave.
Wilt thou take us to thy king?
Toby asked.
Pardon,
Borgolas said, cocking a long ear at the mage.
Oh, goodness. The poor peasant is trying to speak theatrically,
Sylvanadriel whispered.
Wherefore art thou, yon kingeth of thine elves?
Borgolas said, and both elves collapsed into giggles that sounded less like crystal chimes and more like weirdly delicate hyenas.
The king does not suffer fools like you, human,
not any more. Oh, how we elves long for yesteryear,
Sylvanadriel began, her voice going misty with sadness, and a mysterious blue-green nimbus glowing around her person. Borgolas nodded soulfully, pulled out a reed flute, and began to play a somber tune as she continued.
Once the elves ruled supreme, and the land was rich and wise and kind.
How can land be wise?
Argabella asked, but Fia gently placed a hand over her mouth and put a finger to her own lips.
The glories of our ancient days were uncountable. The aching beauty of that long-gone world beyond words. Many a wise and aged, yet still surprisingly youthful-looking and limber elf has turned his back.
Or her back,
Poltro added. Sylvanadriel shot her a dark look, the mystical blue-green nimbus turning momentarily indigo and sparking.
Do you not understand how pronouns serve the narrative?
The elf scolded.
It's called poetic license,
Gustav added. To Fia's surprise, the elf smiled at the goat.
This venerable song of our people will help you better understand our mysterious ways, lest you rouse our wise hearts to elvish anger.
Bargalas's flute disappeared, and a lute materialized in his hands, bone white and carved with esoteric symbols, its strings made of pure gold. He strummed once, and it was a sound so beautiful that a dove flat out fell to the ground at his feet, dead. He began singing.
Humans Humans are the worst of things. They show up and they steal our rings. We need to breed so we have flings. Still, humans are the worst.
Fia, while not liking the way the song was going, admitted that she was enraptured by the complex beauty of the music, as were the rest of her friends. Gustav danced back and forth, agreeing wholeheartedly with the simple truth of the lyrics. For her part, Sylvain Adriel took up a gentle and spiraling harmony, sometimes pointing to one human or another as emphasis. Fia found she couldn't move, so ensorcelled was she by the elvish ballad.
Humans ruin life, yes they do. They only eat and screw and poo. They are far less magical than you, for humans are the worst. Humans destroy all they touch. They fight and grab and steal and clutch. They are not good for very much. Yes, humans are the worst.
Okay, Toby said through lips frozen in delight. We get the point. We can backtrack and go around your rampant morning wood, if only you'll free us from the spell of your rhapsodic disgust.
What are you talking about? Gustav crowed. This song is amazing!
Just one more verse,
Sylvain Adriel whispered as Bargalos's lute strings rang in a crescendo.
But we must let these humans pass, for torturing them is a gas, and we must seduce a human lass, though humans are the worst.
Wait, you must seduce whom?
Gustav said as the others shook themselves awake as if from a dream.
Alas,
Sylvain Adriel began, the nimbus of misty memory yet again coalescing around her silken head in the form of glittering turquoise gas.
So many of our elven lasses have fled the mortal realm to venture west to the fog-shrouded isles of...
Don't tell them,
Bargalos hissed.
Isles of great mystery and bounty that you're not smart enough to find. She continued, we elves are not crass beings, procreating willy-nilly. We are creatures of uncommon taste and refinement, and our women are extraordinarily persnickety, yet we must continue our lineage in our hopes of reclaiming what greatness was once ours.
So you're not great now?
Gustav asked.
Quiet beast!
Bargalos snapped.
We're still great, but we were once greater, the rulers of all the land, an empire of magic and wisdom,
Sylvain Adriel explained.
Once, passage through our realm required gifts of gold and jewels, magical artifacts, or spices from the far dunes. But these days, as destiny looms upon our noble race, we require
fecund wombs.
Gustav offered.
Earthy human mothers for our thrice-blessed progeny!
Sylvain Adriel eyed their party and shrugged, turning to the elf prince.
Well, the one in all black is mostly healed from her anaphylaxis. She'll do for you, right?
Bargalos walked around Poltro as if judging a hairless cat at a cat show.
Good general form and physiognomy, he muttered. For a mortal. You're not so bad yourself, boyo,
Poltro tried to say with a sexy pouting of her lips. As her swelling had not yet gone down completely, it almost worked.
She'll do, Bargalos sighed. Father's orders. And at least there's plenty of glow wine in the crystal chamber of allurement and come hithering. Let's go then.
Fia looked half disgusted and half vexed.
Poltro, you would go with this.
Hot little elf hunk,
Gustav said. Poltro shrugged.
He's confident and saucy. He knows his way around a ditty. And he has the prettiest hair I ever saw. Plus he doesn't smell like chicken. Morning Wood has plenty to recommend it, I'm thinking. I mean, apart from the near-fatal sneezing fits.
Does that mean you'll take us to the Elven King that we might bargain for passage? Toby asked. The elf's ears drooped a little.
I'll take you to my father, so he'll stop nagging me about my duty to Sawyer Eyres. Ask him whatever you want, but good luck with it. He's a right jerk. Now stand close, elbows in, no shoving.
The humans clustered together, but it was clear they weren't yet comfortable in close quarters. Toby kept trying to muscle in near Fia, and Fia kept accidentally stomping on his slippered feet and making him screech. The elves just looked bored at this point, as if they'd much rather be enchanting toadstools or riding giant eagles.
Zounds! How hard is it to follow simple directions? Bargalos said. This'll have to do. Hope no one loses a foot. Now hold your breath and try not to vomit.
Vomit?
Argabella asked, alarmed. Fia put a comforting hand on her back. The elves raised their arms and spoke a word with approximately a million susurrating syllables, and the world turned itself inside out. When the world popped back into focus, everything about it was wrong, in all the best ways. Fia opened her mouth and sucked in a deep breath. The air smelled like magic, which was something like new roses and ancient seaborne mist. The trees, though in nearly the same position, now seemed to be crafted of silver and gossamer, and the ferns and violets looked soft as silk and moved as if they were having their own conversations. In an affront to all merely nice days everywhere, there were somehow even more sunbeams, filled with yet more dancing motes of glittering dust. Bargalos now wore a crown made of pure light and shaped like a tall, nodding mushroom. Argabella, whose mouth had foolishly remained open, vomited up leftovers from yesterday's feast. Gustav leapt into the air in surprise, fell instantly unconscious, and tumbled to the ground like a puppet with cut strings. Fia didn't know who to help first.
"He's a fainting goat," Toby asked Fia.
"He is now." "I call deeps when he dies for real,"
Poltro said, brazenly laying claim to Gustav's giblets. The elves bowed and began walking down a path of smooth gray stones, laid in artful tessellations along the forest floor. The oxen, clearly being good judges of who might have better grain, followed the elves eagerly, the wagon trundling smoothly behind them as if recently greased by the lubricating magic of morning wood. Toby followed his potions, and Poltro followed him.
"Are you feeling well?"
Fia asked Argabella, helping the rabbit girl stand. It occurred to Fia that she hadn't thought about the heart rose, or her proposed snug but fortified cottage, in quite some time. Right now, all she really cared about was restoring the farm boy to a less dead state and, well, maybe having an adventure with a kind person like Argabella. Argabella turned away to wipe her mouth.
"I'm well, if a bit messy. Always did get a bit motion sick, and I've never been particularly brave about travelling to other dimensions and meeting kings. But I've stopped feeling like a popped bubble, at least. Do you think Gustav will wake up?"
Fia shook her head and squatted, chainmail bikini creaking, to scoop the goat up under one bulging arm.
"Between the elves' magic and his own stubbornness, I'm sure he won't be quiet for long."
Together they trailed behind the others, looking around in wonder at the vibrant birds and mist-colored stags gambling about the forest. At some point the elves passed out some tiny croutons, urging them to nibble only a corner. Fia almost choked on her small bite, spitting out nearly an entire loaf of bread.
"As mentioned, it expands,"
Bargalos said with his nearly constant eye-rolling.
"How is that helpful now? I almost died,"
Fia growled.
"Elves are masters of balance and self-discipline,"
Sylvanadriel intoned loftily.
"We take only what is needed and leave the world untouched. Human greed is the root of all evil.
Being a pompous windbag is the root of all evil,"
Fia grumbled to herself. When she'd fallen behind a little with Argabella, Fia pinched off the tiniest corner of her elvish crouton and licked it, jerking her head back in surprise as it turned into a muffin, which she bit into and nearly gagged on.
Pah! Yeah, bran! And it's dry! What's the point of morning wood if he can't even make a muffin moist?
I'm sure it will get better,
Argabella said, nibbling on her own crouton and blushing through her dandelion puff fur.
At least it's not meat, and at least I'm out of the castle. It's as if the world didn't change a bit, but...
You did, Fia asked gently.
Argabella nodded.
It's right peculiar. Up until the castle fell asleep, my main goal was to be a good daughter and become a bard to make my dad proud. And then, when he was out cold, I had oodles of time to figure out